Gopi Janna Balava Girivaro Dare Yashoda Nandana Bhajajanna Randana Ramuna Tira Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Divam Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudiraye Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So is the Srimad Bhagavatam third canto. We are so advanced. Chapter 13, the appearance of Lord Varaha. Varaha. Text 40. Dangstra. Oh, yes. The poison has arrived. The garland of power. Okay. I'm invisible. Maya can't see me. She has to send out a conscious agent to look for me now. Dangstra. Agra.
Agra.
The tips of the tusks.
The tips of the tusks.
Kotya.
Kotya.
By the edges.
By the edges.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
O Personality of Godhead.
O Personality of Godhead.
Twaya.
Twaya.
By you.
By you.
Dhrita.
Dhrita.
Sustained.
Sustained.
Virajate.
Virajate.
Is so beautifully situated.
Is so beautifully situated.
Bhudara.
Bhudara.
O lifter of the earth.
O lifter of the earth.
Bhu.
Bhu.
The earth.
The earth.
Sabhudara.
Sabhudara.
With mountains.
Mountains.
Dangstragra kotya bhagavans tvayadrita. Dhanstragra kotya bhagavans tvayadrita.
Dhanstragra kotya bhagavans tvayadrita.
Virajate budara bhusa budara.
Virajate budara bhusa budara.
Virajate budara bhusa budara. From the water.
From the water.
Nisharataha.
Nisharataha.
Coming out.
Coming out.
Datha.
Datha.
By the tusks.
By the tusks.
Dhrita.
Dhrita.
Captured.
Captured.
Matam Gajendrasya.
Matam Gajendrasya.
Infuriated elephant.
Infuriated elephant.
Sapatra.
Sapatra.
With leaves.
With leaves.
Admani, the lotus flower. Yata vanan nisharato datadritta.
Yata vanan nisharato datadritta.
Yata vanan nisharato datadritta.
Yata vanan nisharato datadritta.
Matanga gajindra shesapatra padmani. Gajendrasya sapatra padmani. Dhanstagra kotya bhagavans tvayadrita. Virajate budara bhusa budara. Yatavanam nisharato datadrita. Sapatra padmini. Bodhye. This is the great sages from Mahar Tapa Janloka after seeing the incarnation of the Supreme Transcendental Lord, right, in the form of a gigantic boar, and his glorious activities in terms of going into the ocean, dropping down into the ocean, and then lifting up the earth, and they're offering prayers. And this is about the 34th prayer. And they're glorifying his body, the form they see. They're glorifying this as the origin of the Vedas, the origin. You know, his different parts of his body are different aspects of the Vedas. Different activities are desires for diksha. Different activities are the preliminary activities before diksha. So today they go on, continuing. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower. Is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower. With leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. Peach, peach. O lifter of the earth.
O lifter of the earth.
The earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves, sustained by an infuriated elephant, just coming out of the water. So there's the flower with the leaves and the earth with the mountains. Oh, very beautiful. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. The fortune of the earth planet is praised because of its being specifically sustained by the Lord. Its beauty is appreciated and compared to that of a lotus flower situated on the trunk of an elephant. As a lotus flower with leaves is very beautifully situated, so the world with its many beautiful mountains appeared on the tusks of Lord Moore, God. It's a very, ecstatic scene, unforgettable scene. Wow. Yeah. So any comments? Questions? No? It's okay. Yeah. It's very fortunate. Yeah. The Earth planet is very fortunate. The fortune of the Earth planet is being praised because it's being specifically sustained by the Lord. So, yeah. Krishna, he's not satisfied in himself, or he wants to increase his happiness, so he expands himself as Swamsa and Vibhinamsa. The Swamsa expansions are Balaram, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, different little avatars, Ram, and these are all plenary portions. But he also expands himself as the Vibhinamsas. And these are the individual tiny living entities. But they're also essential. We're also essential in Krishna's happiness, his satisfaction. So the earth becomes glorified by being lifted. And the earth is Vibhinamsa, but she's also Shakti Vesh. So she has a combination. Krishna, who is Swayam Bhagavan, and then the earth, who is Shakti Avesh Vibhinamsa, like that. And then together they make a very nice combination. I'm always quoting it. At in the description of the Ras Lila dance in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says, the Krishna by himself is not so attractive, but when he's surrounded by his potencies, especially his pleasure potency, then he looks very, very glorious. So everything's there for Krishna, right? But he has to have these, for us to appreciate him and for him to expand his glories, and he has his energies, his incarnations. And these are all essential. Achinta, Veda, Veda, Tava. You can't separate them. You think, I like the roots of the tree, but I'm going to separate the roots and the branches and the fruits and the leaves and the trunk from the tree. I'm going to take those away. Right, separate. What's left? Where's the tree? Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. So we're not different than Krishna. And Krishna is very glorious. Krishna by himself, is very glorious in the cooperation of his potencies. You know, like Lord Varaha lifting a lotus flower out of the water or the earth, looking very beautiful. You know. So it's a very nice combination of that. So she's very fortunate. And, you know, I think Prabhupada will also say that Krishna is also fortunate, glorified by this. It's okay. Sages are appreciated. Let's go on and see what else they say.
Trai mayam rupam idam cha sukaram bhumandalena tadata dritena.
O Lord, as the peaks of great mountains become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the edge of the earth on your tusks.
Purport. The word vibhrama is significant. Vibhrama means illusion as well as beauty. When a cloud rests on the peak of a great mountain, it appears to be sustained by the mountain. At the same time, it looks very beautiful. Yeah. Similarly, the Lord has no need to sustain the earth on his tusks. But when he does so, the world becomes beautiful, just as the Lord becomes more beautiful because of his pure devotees on the earth. Although the Lord is a transcendental personification of the Vedic hymns, he has become more beautiful because of his appearance to sustain the earth. Yeah?
Sangstapayainam jagatam sattashtusham tashtusham.
O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and non-moving, this earth is your wife, and you are the Supreme Father. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, along with Mother Earth, in whom you have invested your own potencies. Just as expert sacrificers put fire in the Irani woods. The so-called law of gravitation which sustains the planets is described, Prabhupada says, herein as the potency of the Lord. Prabhupada calls it the so-called law of gravitation. The so-called law of gravitation. Which sustains the planets is described herein as the potency of the Lord. This potency is invested by the Lord in the way that an expert sacrificial brahmana puts fire in the Irani wood by the potency of Vedic mantras. By this arrangement, the world becomes habitable for both the moving and non-moving creatures.
Moving and non-moving creatures.
The conditioned souls who are residents of the material world are put in the womb of Mother Earth in the same way the seed of a child is put in the womb of the mother by the father. This conception of the Lord and the earth as father and mother is explained in Bhagavad Gita 14.4. Conditioned souls, Sarvayona Shikuntaya Murtaya Sambhavamiya. What's the next one? Tasam Brahma Mahadyonir Aham Bija Pradapita. Yeah. Conditioned souls are devoted to the motherland in which they take their birth. But they do not know their father. The mother is not independent in producing children. Similarly, material nature cannot produce living creatures unless in contact with the Supreme Father, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us to offer obeisances unto the Mother along with the Father, the Supreme Lord, because it is the Father only who impregnates the Mother with all energies for the sustenance, and maintenance of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. Da. Da. So, seems to be talking about this relationship, you know, and Lord Bohr. And specifically, he incarnated because of, you know, Lord Brahma is supposed to be creating so many bodies. So we condition souls to have some opportunity to express our desires and, you know, get free from these contaminations. So he's creating mental children, it's going too slow. And Swayambhu and Satyarupa appear, and we can speed up the production with biological reproduction now. But they need, for this activity, for biological reproduction, they need the earth. Bhumandal. Do the demigods need the Bhumandal? What's the relationship in the Devatas and Bhumandal? Bhumandala, Swargamandala, Maharmandala.
What benefit do the demigods derive?
They're sustained by sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. And when the demons get control of the earth and they start doing sacrifices for themselves, the rakshasas, the daityas, then the demigods become skinny, become weak like that. You know? It's interesting in the Mormon religion, it appears to have many Vedic features in it, strangely enough, even came from America. They say that we existed in some place where it was very subtle. In the picture they show, like, you know, gross people and kind of like faded type people. We existed in some place subtle before we came to this earth. And we took birth in the earth because we couldn't perform pious activities in that place. Yeah? So we took birth in the earth then. Yeah? So you can't perform pious activities in the higher planetary systems because everything is too good. There's no possibility of austerity, you know, physical austerity. Yeah, some, you know, but it's much easier on the earth. Earth is a place where you can do austerities. And then you get elevation by your pious activities like that. So Bhumandal is very important, an important position for all living entities to be sustained. But even though all these benefits come from her, you know, probably makes this point, you know, that there's also a father who gives a seed, right? Ahambija Pradapita, seed-giving father. Of course, you know, in the modern world, people say, you know, well, thank goddess. They don't say, thank God. They say, thank goddess. And it's like this whole women's something movement. You know, women's equal right, women's liberation. It's always there. You know, is Radharani less intelligent? I say women are less intelligent, right? Is Radharani less intelligent? One time, the gopis were very, you know, depressed because they've been playing all morning with Krishna and his friends and Radhakun, and they were losing all the games and they were feeling very, you know, what's the word, depressed, you know. Radharani said, don't worry, you know, it's okay, it's okay. In the morning, we were playing games that involved strength, physical strength, because it was cool, but in the afternoon it'll be too hot to play games like that. And we'll have to play games that require intelligence, and then we're gonna annihilate these guys. These stupid cowherd boys and Krishna, because, you know, girls are more clever, right? Yeah. Girls rule. So this battle of the sexes is going on at every level. And that's part of the whole, what self-realization is, to discover these different relationships and position like that. Yeah. Are we masculine, ontologically, are we masculine or feminine?
Feminine.
Yeah, ontologically, we're all feminine. You know. But within that, and of course, there's different varieties and everything else like that. So this is the one conception. It's a, you know, another to shock the conception is more that Shiva's some kind of secondary guy who hangs around Durga and causes her problems sometimes, or serves her, you know. There was one story that Shiva was went to see Parvati or something, and she was taking her bath, and he barged in and disturbed her. And so then she created Kartikeya out of her perspiration to protect her, and then, you know, he was fighting with Lord Shiva and all this kind of stuff. So there are different shastras for those in the mode of goodness, those in the mode of passion, those in the mode of ignorance. Chandikapanda says a person in the mode of ignorance sees a woman as a hunk of meat. A person in the mode of passion sees her as a woman. And a person in the mode of goodness sees simply the interaction of material nature, like that, sattvic characteristics like that. So the same way there are Puranas for different people, and they describe, you know, Bhudevi and Bhagavan, you know, Hari Purushottam, in different ways, in different relationships like that. But Prabhupada's giving this position here that, you know, Mother Earth is the source of all maintenance for all living entities like that. And then simultaneously then Krishna is the seed-giving father. The quotes Bhagavad Gita to support that position. And the sages then are offering obeisances like that. You know? And she's maintained. And how is she maintained? Right? Because Krishna invests his potency the same way the Brahmanas invest, you know, fire in a Rani wood. It just comes out like that. So I don't know how that works exactly. The Brahmins is whether Rani would, but we have a hint now, we have an orientation. If you go on reading, you find so many things, little sentences, you know, and funny conceptions which are, you know, there with the whole text. You don't catch them until you have the right attitude. For example, there's one verse where Prabhupada Goswami is describing different levels of devotional service. Adoshrada, Sadhu Sangha. Asaktis. Baba.
Prema.
Yeah. So probably you can find, if you do a search in the database, you'll find it. Yeah, mentioned. But the database can't reveal when Prabhupada is paraphrasing a text. It's not intelligent enough to find that. You know? But you find many times that Prabhupada is paraphrasing that. He said the devotee goes through this stage and he experiences this and that happens, you know. Part of it or all of it like that. So as you become more experienced, you see, oh, here Prabhupada is paraphrasing this. Oh, he's explaining it this way this time. You know? When the Nectar of Devotion was published, two different devotees have told me this. Prabhupada said, now, read this book, and all of your questions about devotional service will be answered. Yeah. Six times. Read this book six times, and all your questions will be answered. Yeah. Not that you say, what is this? What is this? What is this? Go on. Yeah, this is our epistemology. You know, the German epistemology is you study everything one time, you go forward, and that's it. You know? But we're saying, no, again and again. Same topic, same discussion, again and again. Yeah. So here we now understand by these rishis, they're appreciating how the earth is floating. Right? The earth is floating in outer space. And Prabhupada says the so-called law of gravity. Right? He said, let's discuss more in the fifth canto about the situation of gravity and things like that. More? Okay. Kashrada Dhitanya Tamastava Prabhu. Who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the universe. By your energy you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. When a scientist discovers something impressive to the ignorant mass of people, the common man, without inquiring, accepts such a discovery as wonderful. But the intelligent man is not struck with wonder by such discoveries. He gives all credit to the person who created the wonderful brain of the scientist. Yeah. Brain of the scientist. A common man is also struck with wonder by the wonderful action of material nature. Yeah? And he gives all credit to the cosmic manifestation. The learned Krishna conscious person, however, knows well that behind the cosmic manifestation is the brain of Krishna. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10, Mayadyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Characara. Since Krishna can direct the wonderful cosmic manifestation, it is not at all wonderful for him to assume a gigantic form of a boar and thus deliver the earth from the mire of the water. The devotee is therefore not astonished to see the wonderful boar, because he knows that the Lord is able to act far more wonderfully by his potencies, which are inconceivable to the brain of even the most erudite scientists. Sages are not making this point. You know? And this occurs many times, you know, so many times. It's an example of how people are impressed by this big result. Yeah. Of course, there's a story of the communists giving bread to the children. Remember that? The Prabhupada says when the communists took over, you know, they got control and they took charge of the school systems and they were out in the farmlands where simple people like that, very simple people there. Hans Luda said that Russian soldiers, when they invaded Germany, some of them saw light bulbs and they unscrewed them and took them back to their mud houses in the steppes of Russia and tried to screw them into the wall like that. And so light would come on like that. So very simple, you know, simple country people. You know. So the communists took over, the little children came to school, they had a new teacher now, and the teacher said, oh, okay, now pray to God, bow your head down and pray to God for bread. So they bowed their head down, oh, God, give us bread. And looked up and said, is there bread? He said, no. He said, now bow your head again, keep it down, and pray very sincerely to Lenin and the Communist Party for bread. So praying, and they put a piece of bread by each child. Now look up. He said, is there bread? He said, yes. So who's more powerful, God or the Communist Party? So Prabhupada said, if anybody had any sense, they would have said, where from you got this bread, you rascal? Yeah. So this is a point, many, many times Prabhupada makes this point that people become confused by the great manifestations of a wonderful scientist, makes great discoveries. Yeah. Another example, another one too. I can't remember what it was now. Yeah. But a scientist or, you know, somebody's discovering so many things, you know, like that. But the idea is that it's already there, right? Yeah. Like that. They call it research because the search has already been done. Now it's research. It's going, looking again, finding what Krishna has already created like that. And it's already all described in the Vedas, you know, in the most practical form like that. You don't have to do so much investigation. The Vedas describe Vastu, architecture, Jyotish, astrology, you know, Danda Veda, political sciences, Gandharva Veda, music, fine arts, dance. What else? Ayurveda, medicine, Yantravidhi, mechanics, Gradit, mathematics, Dhanurveda, just Dandaveda. Yeah, different names like that. Yeah. So this way, everything is there, you know. But then we want to, you know, claim the credit, you know, all of our potency like that. Somebody else too. Yeah, actually, I was on a waiting for the train in San Francisco, the BART, the municipal train. And one Indian man came up to me. I was dressed like this. I had on like plastic sandals. You know? And he said, "Why are you worshiping God if you are wearing synthetic sandals like that? You know? These are made by man, you know." And I was thinking of this, and I said, "Well, yeah, who gave the intelligence to this person to do that?" And he was completely, you know. Arrogance was destroyed. So simple arguments, but it's just a fact. People just, nobody's like, you know, one tailor came and told the king, "Oh, I can make you a wonderful set of clothes. It's very expensive and it's so fantastic." It's a famous story, right? And then he made this set of invisible clothes only the king's friends could see it like that, you know. And so then the king went out with no clothes on, looking at all of his followers, and they all knew that, that if they were envious of the king, then they couldn't see it. So they all said, "Oh, how beautiful are the king's clothes? They are, the color is so beautiful," like that. And he said, "Yes, yes, it's so beautiful. Yes, it's that nice color. It's a beautiful color," like that. "Oh, and the collar is, yeah, like that, you know." So then the king went on parade in public amongst all the people. The news spread that only the enemies of the king could not see the clothes. Everyone was saying how the king's clothes were so nice. But the little child came out and said, "The king has no clothes!" Like that. And everybody's like, "It's a fact." So the king had to decide. It's the same way as the Prabhupada gives such simple arguments. You know, yes, it's a fact. I mean, he did all these wonderful things, but where did he get his intelligence from? I mean, he didn't invent it, you know? Yeah. So these people are appreciating, all right, if God can create the universe, then why is it so miraculous that he can also, you know, manipulate the thing? He created it. You know? Yeah. And then appreciating higher and higher glories. We appreciate them first in the creation. That's the natural sequence in the Bhagavatam also. Appreciating these pantheistic incarnations, Vibhuti-mat-sattva. When the sun comes up and the light shines across the patio, everybody feels it's just natural. So nice. You may want to go out and maybe look at it, you know, and feel the crisp air. Yeah, this is God. That's what you're appreciating. I have the taste of water, I have the fragrance of the earth, I have the light of the sun. The coming and going of the days and the nights are just glancing over us. So you feel enlivened. Okay. Well, if his pantheistic incarnations are like this, what to speak of his other incarnations? Paramatma features next. And then finally, the Bhagavan feature. And the Bhagavan feature also has so many different aspects. And a pure devotee can appreciate those through material nature. In seeing these things, his appreciation of Bhagavan increases through the, you know, nature and things like that, appreciating, you know, yeah, seeing these things. Vidun Vata, two more verses. Vidun Vata Vidamayan Nijambapur. O Supreme Lord, undoubtedly we are inhabitants of the most pious planets, Jana, Tapas, and Satya. But we still have been purified by the drops of water sprinkling from your shoulder hairs by the shaking of your body. Ordinarily, the body of a hog is considered impure. But one should not consider that the mountain, that the hog incarnation assumed by the Lord is also impure. That form of the Lord is a personified Vedas and is transcendental. The inhabitants of Janatapas and Satya Lokas are the most pious persons in the material world. But because those planets are situated in the material world, there are so many material impurities there also. Therefore, when the drops of water from the tips of the Lord's shoulder hairs were sprinkled upon the bodies of the inhabitants of the higher planet, they felt purified. The Lord, the Ganges water is pure because it emanates from the toe of the Lord. And there is no difference between the water emanating from the toe and that from the tips of the hair and the shoulders of the Lord. They are both absolute and transcendental. Da. Lord Varaha ki. Shukra Rupa ki. He'll come and shake his hair on us like that. No, the dog comes out of it. You know, sometimes a dog will take a bath in the some whole water or just like some garbage water. You know, come out and shake his hair on you, and you go, yeah. Dog, you know. Yeah. What if you get pigs, right? Pigs in India. Yes. You know, I had to go take care of some printing business for the Bhaktivedanta Institute. It was in Madras. So I was crossing over one bridge with a unique aroma coming out of the river. And what it was all the different sewer waters in the city were being dumped into this one central sewer thing. And it was about as wide as this room. And it was kind of flowing down about this fast, you know, kind of oily, you know, black color. And on the beach were some sunbathers on the beach there. And they, you know, it was relaxing in the morning sun. And there's a bunch of pigs. All these pigs were lying there. And they had, you know, really, how great. How isn't it nice how the human beings take care of us so well like that? This, you know, liquid garbage thing here. We can just, you know. And then, you know, they fill their bellies with everything imaginable. And then they're lying there in the sun, just, you know, baking. Oh, wow, what a life like that. And then one of them was still busy in the water there. And he hadn't quite gotten his fill, so he was swimming around, amphibious beast. And his nose was just above the water. He was like looking for really good things in the ocean of nectar, you know. Then my mind was flashing, wow, this is what Prabhupada talks about as a Kanista Adhikari. Right? So they engage in just enough devotional service to keep their nose out of the water. They pray to God just enough not to get, you know, but they want to enjoy the material world like that, however they can, but, you know, just enough devotee not to get, you know, overwhelmed by the waves. Let the waves come and you get, you know, covered over like that. So, ordinarily, the body, these guys came out, of course, their bodies were black with this oily stuff, and shake their hair, and, you know, and all these piglets were drinking milk from their mothers, and thinking, oh God, what is this? It's just, you know, recycled garbage milk like that. Ah. So it's all contaminated, everything from a pig, you know, is contaminated. You know. But these people are saying they felt purified by this association. So, what, Upadeshamrita is also a verse, no? Dristai Swabhava Janateer, text number. Naprakritatvamiha Bhakta Janasya Paset. Gangambhasam Nakulu Mudbuddha Pinapankar Brahmadvatamakatati Niradhanamayam. Yeah. From ordinary vision, a devotee, an advanced devotee, Uttama Adhikari, who's very advanced and undeviating devotional service, whose heart is free from propensity to criticize others, right? That person, he may appear to have a deformed body, you know, some problem, mental problems, so many things. But somebody who's advanced in devotional service can see the condition of his heart and his situation in devotional service and can appreciate that everything about him is transcendental. Janardhan, one of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's bus leaders, was describing one time Prabhupada was staying one place And then everybody was, you know, going to the door to see Prabhupada. Some people were going into the airport, you know, to see him leaving. But some devotees had to stay, and so they're all chanting and, you know, kirtan going on. And then Janardhan said he suddenly realized something, and he left the kirtan and ran into Prabhupada's room and locked the door. And then Prabhupada left, and within the moments after that, all the rest of the devotees were banging on the door. You know. What did Prabhupada leave? Usually Prabhupada, the secretaries were saying, people would give Prabhupada shirts and dhotis and wristwatches. And in the last moment, Prabhupada would just go through, sort out the number of clothes he needed, the number of wristwatches he needed, you know, pack those, and then just leave everything else like that. You know? And so then there were all these remnants. So Janardhan was the first person to realize this, and hey, wait a second, went back and locked the door, and everybody else was banging the door, and hey, come on, Prabhu, how would happen? So he was looking around, you know, saw a nice thing, you know. Then he saw some eucalyptus branches that Prabhupada had used, that he chewed on like that, you know. So he rubbed those on his head a little bit and put those in his pocket. You know. He was, you know, going out, you know. So I just found this and that, a couple things, you know, like that, you know. He had the real nectar there, you know, Prabhupada's personal toothbrush, you know, on his altar, like that. Yeah, maybe he still has it, I don't know. That's something, yeah. My guru is a person. You look at that. Yeah, he, you know, more. Right? He incarnates. Right? And spiritual master is expansion, the incarnation of the expansion of Krishna. And then we have to appreciate, Prabhupada says that we should not judge pure devotee just by external features. We have to understand his internal consciousness. Otherwise we commit offenses. We have to understand the internal consciousness. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So it's Lord Varaha, even though he appears like an ordinary village hog to some people, not everything about him is transcendental. Last verse, see how we're making progress. Savai bata brasta matis tab ais sate. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow upon us your causeless mercy. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. Preparation of Prabhupada. Middle speculators who want to understand the limit of the unlimited are certainly nonsensical. Every one of them is captivated by the external potencies of the Lord. The best thing for them is to surrender unto Him, knowing Him to be inconceivable. For thus they can receive His causeless mercy. This prayer was offered by the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems, namely Jana, Tapas, and Satya, who are far more intelligent and powerful than human beings. Vishvam Samastam is very significant here. There are the material world and spiritual world. The sages pray. Both worlds are bewildered by your different energies. Those who are in the spiritual world are absorbed in your loving service, forgetting themselves and you also. And those in the material world are absorbing your immaterial sense gratification, and therefore also forgetting you. No one can know you, because you are unlimited. It is best not to try to know you, but by unnecessary mental speculation. Rather, kindly bless us so we can worship you with causeless devotional service. So this is the final point, right? And this is a very fundamental point, because the world is predominated by science. You know, Prabhupada's making this point. He said actually it's diminishing, it'll lose its potency, and it has. What does the word science mean? Latin root.
To know.
Yeah. What is conscience? Consciousness.
Conscience.
It means common knowledge. And usually referred to some kind of guilty activity. People were, you know bad conscience, consciousness. What is nescience? No knowledge. What is omniscience?
Omniscience.
All knowledge. Yeah, all everywhere. What is omnivorous?
You'll eat anything.
So picture, there's a restaurant in Berkeley, we call it the Omnivore. A lot of French food. Snails, fish eggs, caviar, escargot, frog legs. Yeah. What else? We got intercondiscience, we got nescience, omniscience, conscience. Can't think of any more. Ba, ma, pa, ra, re, ru, ku. Yeah. So, in knowledge. Yeah. What is the word knowledge in Sanskrit?
Veda.
Veda means what? Wisdom, no?
Gyan.
Gyan is knowledge. Yeah. And vidya. Yeah. Vidya is knowledge. Yeah.
Vidya is knowledge.
Or to know. Something related. Yeah.
Vidya.
Yeah. Vidya vinayana sampanna. So this is, and we have a very clear understanding of our idea of knowledge. You know, knowledge and renunciation, jnana and vairagya, are products of bhakti. You know? First you determine your motivation, and then you develop knowledge. Right? You know? They say in science, well, why are you learning? Why are you developing knowledge? Oh, knowledge for knowledge's sake. It's cheating. There has to be some motivation. Right? Who benefits from science? Sociological studies, middle-aged white males. It's not poor black ladies, you know? Not white rats. I don't get much out of it like that. They get all these weird things happen to them, you know? Like that. There's a whole book called Dr. Rat. It's very interesting. There's this rat who's kind of nuts from all these science experiments. He's been castrated during one experiment. He's like a weird guy. He's trying to encourage all the rest of the rats to feel good about their future, how they're being sacrificed for science. And as he's going through all these things, he's quoting scientific sources for experiments and stuff like that. Really strange rat, strange book, Dr. Rat. So this is a position, but yeah, there's a motivation. We don't talk about that because we don't want people to be, to rise up and revolt against science, because science is giving us very good communication. For us middle-aged white guys, it gives the best communication, the best medicine, the best transportation. It's all for our lifestyle, you know, like that. So we're going to keep that a little bit hidden. We don't talk about that, otherwise people might, you know, if they knew about it, they might not support it so much. You know? So the first place is motive. Then once you decide why you're going to learn, then obviously you learn different things. You know? I'm going to learn because I want to defeat my enemies. Okay, then you get a certain kind of knowledge. Yeah? 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 I want to understand because I want to establish that men are more intelligent than women. Or I want to establish because we never went to the moon. You know, you start with some motive, you know, whatever it is, then you know on the basis of that. Yeah? So here, Papa says, no one can know you because you are unlimited. It is best not to try to know you by unnecessary mental speculation. So mental speculation is okay. As far as I can understand, mental speculation means algebra, you know, arithmetic, calculus, you know, and these linear thinking processes, grammar, like that. You know, these linear thinking processes. Iconographic thinking, we're here now, is meditation. That's better. It's better. You know, but it's almost unknown in the West as a process like that, contemplation, meditation. But it's still one step below bhakti. But Prabhupada says when you come to that platform, you're almost on the devotional platform. You really purify contemplation, your Buddha, you're almost on the spiritual platform at that point. Yeah.
Like 1960 to 1970s are much different, but now what I see is that science is full of bhakti.
Science is full of bhakti. Like, so you have your motivation there. You see bhakti everywhere. It's like Brahman on the road.
Because like science, also like science has made so much advances, especially in the field of mind.
Yeah.
Which just points like now you can prove that okay, japa is good for. You can prove by science that japa is good for you.
Because well, some people. No. Also, some people will say that it actually causes you mental problems. There are scientists who publish work that these things are very bad for you. You should disengage in sense gratification, smoke cigarettes, and you know that you know these things cause damage, you know, to your mind.
They can be one or two persons who may claim anything.
Well, this we have to go through a statistical analysis, the analysis of the research work, and see how many people say what.
Yeah, so like Herbert Benson is like a main first thing. He writes a book about relaxation response. which is just like japa, the what's the benefit of japa.
Yeah.
And that's what he writes in 1970s, that when he wrote that book, at the time science was thinking they can control everything.
Yeah.
And they thought that by controlling the body, the mind is nothing, by medicine we can control the whole body and mind.
Yeah.
And it was like something which was unacceptable to science.
Mm-hmm.
But now we see the world, when he writes that forward in like 2000.
Yeah.
Now it's a very common thing.
Yeah.
To accept that mind has affects the body.
In Cheviot Hills, it was a morning walk, the beach walk, but it was in Cheviot Hills. And Prabhupada says these rascal scientists, they're deceiving people. And how much longer can they do it? And Sudhamanamara says, Prabhupada, they've all been doing it forever. And Prabhupada says, not forever, just for the last few hundred years has this idea been prominent of, you know, jnana and materialistic causes for everything like that, rationalism, you know. And he said, and within 50 years it will be finished. 50 years? He goes like that, you know. And whether you preach or not, you know. Because it doesn't work. Because people say, people are more intelligent now. Because science is making them intelligent. Because they can see more of the history, they can see more other places like that, and therefore they can judge this, you know. Gopal Hari, who's taking doing his master's degree, now doing his PhD in Oxford on science and religion, you know. And they're commenting that, you know, science is Sadhguru too, is coming to this point where, you know, they just can't explain matter any better than they did before. You know? Now they're trying string theory, you know, but it's so completely intellectual that it has no practical application in terms of better, you know, whatever, you know, people want like that. And so therefore the budget for science, the super collider has stopped. It's going down now, and so the budget for science is heading towards the same direction as the budget for theology, right? Really. And then, whereas now the money is all going towards application, research, and new gizmos. Another example, Radhika, who was teaching at University of Florida, so they published a very big brochure, full color, you know, to give their alumni people for donations, for students, everything else. There was not one thing about liberal arts in the whole thing. It was all science and science technology. And, you know, our medical union has discovered how to do face replacements. Oh, how wonderful. Like that.
Huh? I think we can accept, like, Harvard as a whole, the same Mind and Body Institute, which prescribes japa as a medicine.
Yeah.
But they may say, oh, you do japa of any mantra, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
So that's where we want to look. We can look good there. We can go for dirt also there. There's everything.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You get like, for example, Houston Smith, The Religions of Man. It's the biggest published book on religion in the history of the world. Textbook. But he published a book recently, which is very nice. And he's a very good scholar. You know? If you read the book, it's very nice. He's just quoting for so many modern people. Like, what is the situation like that? Of the actual community. And so again, who's going to tell you? You're going to take different people. Ultimately, you've got to listen to somebody. You can do your own research work from God. It's like, who can research the whole thing? You know, so you're doing your research and listening to people, taking your own personal experience, doing some experiments, and you arrive at some conclusion. You know? And of course, if you have someone, Chandika Prabhupada says, for these practical decisions, you know, you should just consult Parashara's Dharma Shastra. And he says things are so confusing, it's difficult to write now, to make any kind of standard for Kali Yuga. So one sadhaka totally dedicated to spiritual life can tell you what's happening practically and how you should do things, what your standard should be, like for remarriage, divorce, you know, social laws, medical application of technology. He said in the absence of such a person, six brahmanas can come to the same conclusion. So if you got you, me, you know, five or six other good people who kind of, and they would say, well, I don't know this too well, honestly. Well, I don't know it too well either. Okay, so we actually can't make a decision. No. But we can come to some ideas. Okay. Let's talk. He knows better than we do. No. So they would, okay. And you come to the actual, you say, you come to the same position of what is the actual situation in the material world from a perspective like that. So Houston Smith's book is very interesting because he really seems to be tuned into the whole thing like that. Well, he was a professor of, head of the Department of Theology at Syracuse University a long time ago when he was like, you know, doing his active career. He may have passed on now, I don't know. He's very, that's just like that on the edge. He's at Berkeley, still doing teaching. So at one point, the university's central division gave money for different projects, you know. And then they had a committee which to decide, like in science, biology, and of course, you know, the scientists decided who they were going to invite, everybody. So it came time for theology to get their money, you know, $2,000. And so he wanted to invite David Bohm. Is David Bohm a theologist? Theologian?
He's a physicist.
Yeah, he's a physicist, a contemporary of Einstein. So all everybody's looking at is, you know, you have almost no money for your school, and now you're going to use whatever the money you have to invite a physicist? You know? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay, it's your budget, you know. So he invited him, and then he, as a matter of etiquette, he had to go to the head of the Department of Physics to just get permission to have this guy speak, because he's a physicist, and they're very envious of their areas. Why are you having a physicist talk in your area? So the guy said, of course you can invite him, you know, and if you need any more money for things, don't worry, we can, you know. Oh, it's okay. So he came, and he stayed at his house. It was very pleasant. The next day they had this the lecture, and the biggest hall of the university was filled. They had satellite television set up so people could watch it on television. And because he was a contemporary of Einstein, everything else, and he got up there in the first row with the Department of Physics, all their professors and students like that. You know. And he started talking, and Houston Smith said he was sure that except for a few mathematicians and professors like that in physics and those things, he lost everybody within the first 10 minutes. Because there was nothing but mathematical equations and stuff like that, writing on the board and discussing things like that. You know. But everybody stayed because it was such a prestigious thing, and just to see him and hear him and get some idea, a general idea. So then he asked for questions, and then the head of the physics department said, Professor Bohm, you know, what you're presenting seems to be philosophy rather than math than science. And respectfully, Dr. Bohm said, I make no distinction between the two, like that. And that was the last question. And everybody's looking over at Houston Smith, and Houston Smith is smiling. And you see your point. You know, that physics is ultimately philosophy. It's a philosophy of nature. So he's very good. And so in his book, what his conclusion is that the modern situation has been, science was predominant. Science is going to solve all our problems. Science will take care of alcoholism, homosexuality, poverty. Everything will be cured by science. We'll hydroponic gardens on the moon. You know, all these different things we'll discover. Science is back in the 70s. I remember when I was a child, Dharmakrishna, he's president of the temple in South America, a very powerful guy. He reminded me, I've forgotten this, we were both children in high school. There was this big kind of lamentation. And the lamentation was that science was just on the verge of discovering immortality. It was just like, you know, and if not immortality, at least how to make us live for 200, 300, 400 years. And at that time, of course, we'll figure it out, you know. And everybody was very, very depressed for the old people. Because, see, they just missed out. You know, they just like, you know, we guys who are going to live like 20 more years are guaranteed to become immortal, and these guys are all going to die. And it's, wow, what a bummer for these poor people. They just missed out on immortality. But that was actually, I'm saying, that was the consciousness. You know? Hang on. That was the consciousness. Okay. But then he's saying that after that, so it didn't happen. People were still dying. So after that, we came into the postmodern age. It was called the postmodern age. That was the name. People gave it. At that point, it switched over to more concern for everybody has their philosophy. You know, black people are just as good as white people. Women are just as good as men. Animal rights, you know. And everything is okay. You know, whatever you want to believe is okay. So that, we tried that, and that didn't work out. So now we're in this current age where people are looking for a new philosophy. And he said, at this point, what's happened is that it's kind of like Hiranyakasipu, in our point of view, just staring at Prahlad. He's tried to stomp him with elephants. He's tried to poison him. He's tried to burn him in fire. He's tried to have him stabbed to death. He's tried to destroy him by sending him to the university to be educated. Right? But nothing has destroyed him. He's sitting there just staring at him. You know? And that's, he says, that's the point where this philosophy, which Prabhupada says has been prominent for a couple hundred years, rational materialism, this great point in the history of the world, has come to this point where they know they've had all the power, they had all the control of education, they had everything they could have had for so long, and they have not been able to destroy this idea of God and the soul. You know? About 6 years ago, Crick Watson, he said, we have to get rid of this idea of the soul once and for all. And he still is vehement. It's the thing that's destroying our idea of reality. There is no soul. You know, this was only 6 years ago. So again, some people, are still vehement materialists. And other side, we see, some people are very much changing like that. So his point is, this is what his view, this is what's happening, is that there's no cocky, generally speaking, the materialists aren't cocky and arrogant anymore about poo-poo on the soul and you religionist people and go, light your candles and ring your bells, and it's good for women and children to not steal things from us like that because they're afraid God will get them, boogeyman. We're in favor of religion. Everybody needs a boogeyman to control them, But in general, so if we're following the Bhagavatam model at this point, the scientists are going to turn to religionists and say, where does your power come from, Prahlad? And we have to say, it's everywhere, And they're going to say something, some big thing is going to happen. Other people I know, Dimitri Katsikas, he's in seven international who's who's. How many who's who's are you in? Anyway, Nishinga's father, very prominent historian. And he says, yes, I agree with Prabhupada. I knew that science wasn't going to be able to hold it because people have this desire for mysticism, for the Atmos is something too real. And so he said, what's happened now is that science is coming down as a philosophy of everything. And so different alternatives are opening up. And I just talked to a professor of philosophy at the University of Madrid. He said the same thing. Their philosophy department is just like breaking up. And it's the traditionalists are losing it. Traditionalists are supporting the materialistic scientists. And they're looking for something new. That's why they're talking to us, because they want this. But he says the danger is that unless the major Vaishnava religions cooperate to present their ideas very vigorously, nicely, every man, every way, then it's going to fall into fascism. And fascism is that some person who's more, more than a human being. Hitler was more than a human being. Mussolini was more than a human being. Hirohito was more than a human being. He's some kind of supernatural being, that develops, and then there's some kind of like this anthropomorphic fascist, type thing will develop, and this is the whole world will go into this horrible darkness. So it's very dangerous times like that. And different people, there's different views of what's happening, different, awareness. And my experience is about out of five people in the university environment, three will be materialists, like that. And two will be, it doesn't mean that they believe in Vaishnavas. A Buddhist is not, was a Buddhist a materialist? Nope. No, actually not a materialist. He's an anti-materialist. And then other people have different philosophies. Two of them will be like some kind of transcendental idea. Like Jung, Jungian psychologist. Jung said he didn't know if it was a god or not. He said that. Very honest man, very nice person. But he accepted archetypal forms as kind of a Kantian philosophy. There's fundamental ideological forms that exist. Different philosophies. So Kant. And the Germans never were into science the same way we were. They always had this Kantian idea behind science. Whereas the British and Americans got into this, there is no mental platform either. There's no mind. So different philosophies are running. And maybe out of those five, the third guy is flexible. If you start talking to him and giving him good information, then he'll also accept, let's lighten up. Charles John Searle, the mind is produced from matter, right? That was his idea. He had this kind of complicated idea about a certain kind of matter, like that. But that was his idea, that the computers can't think like that. That's his thing. And we are, but in a certain way they produce thoughts. So in the first international conference on the study of consciousness within science or whatever it was at the University of Tucson, they brought up this idea of the non-material mind, and even he was going, well, all right, you know, we've got to discuss this. He gave it a platform for discussion like that. You know. And when they presented this as the first conference, scientific conference in the study of consciousness, and the Bhaktivedanta Institute wrote them and said, about 5 years ago or 6 years ago in 1990, we organized this conference. Well, maybe some weird thing with weird people. No. Sir John Eccles, you know, Charles Towns, you know, George Wald, Rosen, all these people like that. All these, they were all there. Oh my God. So then they admitted this was, you know, was, well, this conference is the most, you know, first prominent. You know, conference, but there was other previous conferences, such as the conference by the Bhaktivedanta Institute, things like that. So they, Prabhupada's influence. Yeah, it's okay.
I saw like science for myself.
Yeah.
That the body is so complicated and so balanced, also ecology is so balanced.
Yeah.
So for me, it's so simple to see, okay, well, yeah. God is there, who is maintaining that balance.
Yeah.
So, like, before that, I just used to believe in God, but when becoming more into science, my faith in God has even increased. So I see these people, what you want to get from something, and you can always get from
it. It's your motivation. Louis Pasteur said, a little science takes man away from God. A little more brings him back. You know? So Newton said, there's two books to understand God, the Bible and nature, where God is writing every moment with his own hand. You know? So there's a whole thing on the root, the religious roots of the scientific revolution. You know, a good book, Quantum Questions by Ken Wilber. He doesn't go back to Newton and people like that. He goes to modern guys, Einstein, de Broglie, James Jean, Planck, Heisenberg, Schrodinger, like that. And he goes through them and shows all of them had philosophical perspective. You know? And most of them, you know, very, very nice quotations like that. If modern people if modern scientists would, you know, keep the mentality of the people who started modern science, we'd be okay. Einstein said, when it goes beyond its realm, it's not science, it's scientism. It's just designed to deal with matter in a certain way. Final point.
And also, right now, in the psychology, there's a cognitive therapy called.
Yeah.
And there's an author called, Don't Sweat philosophy, who says that by being contented.
Yeah.
He talks about happiness. Yeah. And what they discuss, I see, is just they are presenting the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita in a more understandable way. So even though these people have not read Bhagavad Gita, still they are coming, when we want to be happy, ultimately we have to come to the same conclusions which Bhagavad Gita comes.
Yeah.
So these are independently coming to the same conclusions. So psychology is coming towards Bhagavad Gita.
Well, it always has been. Always. Our philosophy, the truth is, that by this introspective method you can understand the nature and the Paramatma up to that level, that there has to be some kind of inspirational aspect. And Bhagavad Gita doesn't go much beyond that, really. But the Prabhupada says, to understand Krishna as a person, Bhagavan, then you have to go to the Vedic literatures, you have to have descending knowledge. But the introspective position, you can come to this point. That's what psychology means. People who are inclined to this thing, they become psychologists and they appreciate, the psychiatrists within, so many names like that. But, a good example, Dr. Bandhopadhyaya, Prabhupada preached this. You have to explain things in a scientific fashion for your own benefit and for other people's. Okay, Sridhar Maharaj took it up. We organized a science congress. Dr. Bandhopadhyaya in Calcutta saw it was effective. He told his department, if you want people to take interest in ancient history, you've got to explain it scientifically. I said, let's organize a conference on science and technology in ancient India. And it was so successful, it was on national television, it was very interesting for modern man. I was there. So I could see. They didn't know it. You know, the public media didn't know where the whole impetus came from, right? Well, it came from the University of Calcutta. It came from Dr. Bandyopadhyaya. It came from Bhakti Damodar Swami. It came from, yeah, you see, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So yes, I mean, we can also accept that, you know, this work. I mean, I've seen, you know, so many places. I see places where it's popping up where I can trace it back. You know, Benford, Gregory Benford. He's a famous, world-famous astrophysicist from the University of California, Irvine. He, Bhakti Sudhamaras took him to meet Prabhupada. He writes science fiction. In one of his science fiction stories, his character meets this yogi in a garden in Los Angeles, and the guy tells him some things, which is a little part of the whole story. And the guy is like having these experiences his whole life. His girlfriend freezes herself, cryogenics, and leaves him. Big emotional thing. In the end, he's dying. He's having surgery. And they say, you have to do exploratory surgery. Sign this. Give us permission. Otherwise, you're going to die. And the person, the character is saying, but we don't die. You know, the soul's different than the body. We don't die. Like that. And that's the end of the story. So he got that. You know, that's how much he was able to absorb. He had become a devotee. But from association with Prabhupada, he got that. Yeah, this is most reasonable, that the soul is different. Yeah. So Prabhupada ki, Madhvaraha ki, Mahaprasadam ki, scientists ki, good scientists ki, rascal scientists, kick on their face with boot, hobnail boot. One, my friend Bharata, devotee, he's walking with Prabhupada. Turn this on.
This robot is this.
He was walking with Prabhupada on the beach in Hawaii, and Prabhupada was talking about the rascal scientists like that, you know, how they, you know, causing abortions and everything else like that. And he's, you know, so he's walking, and then Prabhupada's kind of stopped talking. He's ahead of everybody else. And Barbara was going next to most of the boys are falling behind. Prabhupada's kind of muttering to himself. And he said,